You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, October 12th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Columbus Day. And to celebrate the day when this country was finally discovered, there had been no one who had ever discovered this country that was European prior to Christopher Columbus, although I think there was others, right? I know, Matt.
You get it. People think that they were Vikings that came here first.
Well, okay, whatever. The point is that, nevertheless, we have our myths and fictions we must hang on to. And, you know, what are we going to say? Like, well, there was already people here, but they weren't people who spoke English like Christopher Columbus. Who spoke a bastardized version of English called Spanish. Wait, did he speak Spanish or
he was Italian and he sailed for Spain.
Right. Okay. Well, he probably spoke Spanish.
Italian and Spanish are close enough where you could pick it up if you know either.
They're both bastardized versions of English. Let's be honest. So there you have it. It is Columbus Day. And folks, I am currently, I don't know if I'm exactly right this moment as you're listening, on a flight to Las Vegas, where I have been credentialed to cover the Democratic debate between Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley. Are they letting Lincoln Chafee up on
there? They're letting Lincoln Chafee up there, and I think Jim Webb too.
Not Lawrence Lessig. Now, why is that? Just because he hasn't rated in any poll?
Yeah, I think that's why he didn't hit the amount that they want, polling-wise.
And I will be doing, well, frankly, I don't know what I'm going to be doing. I don't know if I'm going to be doing live coverage or what. I will send out a notice on the app. So at majorityapp.com, I'll send out a notice and let you know if I'm going to be live. Now, there's a 50 to 60% chance I'm going to forget to do that, too. Nevertheless, I may be live during the debate. I may be live after the debate. One way or another, there will be a podcast on Wednesday, sometime around noon to 2, wherein Cliff Schechter and I will discuss what we heard at the debate. I may get into the spin room. I don't know, folks. You've got to please stop pressuring me so much. I just don't know. I don't have an answer for you.
People want to know, Sam.
Now, Matt, on Friday, we thought that was the last time that you and I would appear together on a podcast. It turns out this is the last time that we're going to appear together on a podcast. Tomorrow, Tuesday, you'll be doing the final Matt and Mike.
That's true.
It's going to be really sad. I imagine it's going to last like 17 hours.
It should last long.
And then Michael will say, as soon as you wrap up, will say, I got a headache. Can you do all the work? For old time's sake.
Then no one's going to listen to that show because right after we wrap up, I'm out of here. So I guess you might have just that show might only live in the live.
The way you got to do it, Michael's out of the office right now, so I'll tell you what you do. You say, Michael,
I'm really not feeling
good. No, I would say, that was your best show ever.
Yeah.
And then you go, but I've got to go.
If only someone got this up, they would probably be networking with everybody everywhere. They'd have their own MSNBC and Fox News show simultaneously.
Yeah, Michael wants two shows simultaneously on two different networks. He wants to bridge the divide.
During the commercial of one show, he turns around to cameras facing him on the other side, and he does a completely different show.
Long lens. They'll be actually across 6th Avenue, I think is what you would involve in that. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, and then on Thursday, I will be live from the Mass Torts Conference in Vegas, also on Friday. I should have some great guests for you, a great mix of attorneys, of broadcasters, of activists. It should be they should be really enjoyable shows. Matt, enjoy your last show tomorrow. And then, well,
you know. See ya, sucker.
So long. We'll see you in 6 weeks when your startup fails. Today on the program, we have I don't know how long this interview is. It's a medium-sized interview with Elizabeth Runick. She is a writer for the New Republic, and she's written a great piece on the Wonder Drug, Inside the Medical Marijuana Industry's Wild New Frontier. It is a great piece expressing the utter sort of insanity, irrationality of our policies surrounding marijuana, the heartbreak and the frustration that parents and I imagine other parents of children who could really benefit from a well-regulated medical marijuana industry. And I would imagine that's the case of other patients as well. So without further ado, we'll take a little quick break with some music. Not too long, Matt.
45 minutes.
I'm trying to. And we'll be right back with Elizabeth Brunig. And again, check out tomorrow, Matt and Mike, Monday on a Tuesday. And then Wednesday, I will have a roundup of the Democratic debate. Talk to you then.
I turned my camera on. I cut my fingers on the way. On the way. The way I'm slipping away, I turned my feelings on. You made me untouchable for life. Yeah, you wasn't alone.
We are back, Sam Cedar, on the Majority Report. On the phone, Elizabeth Brunig. She is the staff writer, or a staff writer, I should say, with the New Republic on her latest piece, Inside the Medical Marijuana Industry's Wild New Frontier. Welcome to the program, Elizabeth.
Thanks so much for having me.
I got to say, I had sort of a general awareness of just sort of the netherworld that medical marijuana is in, but I don't think I quite realized how crazy it is in some respects. But before we get to that aspect of it, let's start with the reason why this issue is so urgent in many respects. Tell us a little bit about Harper Howard and the Howard family.
So Harper Howard has CDKL5, which is a very rare genetic disorder that was only discovered a few years ago, actually. And I believe the people who have been diagnosed with it on Earth right now are in the double digits. There are just not that many of them, or maybe just the triple digits. But it's a disorder that comes with almost unceasing seizures. Some of them are visible, the tonic, clonic, or grand mal seizures that, you know, everyone has probably seen in real life or in film. And then some of them are not visible, but they do affect the neurological system. So it's a very difficult disorder to live with. And what makes the medical marijuana issue so pressing is some people with CDKL5 and some people with other forms of very severe epilepsy, like Dravet syndrome or Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, have had a lot of success with cannabidiol, a substance also known as CBD, which is derived from cannabis. And it treats seizures that are very difficult to treat with pharmaceuticals. And Harper's family has had enormous success, not 100%, but a huge amount of success with taking care of Harper's seizures using cannabidiol.
It's an incredibly dramatic moment when you relate where Harper's mom is expressing to you the drop-off in seizures that they experience over the course of a 2-week period once they started using this CBD oil, or sometimes known as hemp oil, as you write. It's incredible to imagine, having a child going for 3 or 4 or 5 years with this child experiencing tens of seizures a week. Harper was going through, I think they had recorded 68 a week, and those are just the ones that they are aware of. And within 2 weeks, it had dropped to none.
Right, none. I mean, they recorded no visible seizures in that time. And then when they actually took Harper to the doctor's office and had the doctor use a brain scan to detect the invisible seizures, those had also dropped off enormously. So you went from having a kid who, you know, was basically not functional because of these constant seizures to having a kid who was really, really making a lot of progress in a very short period of time.
I want to move on to the aspects of the CBD oil, but I wonder, in your time that you spent with them, I mean, did you get a sense of like what that did? I would imagine in some ways it fundamentally changes the relationship between that child and well, not just, I guess, her family, but just the world.
Right. I mean, and that was what Penny took away from it is, you know, you had Harper, who does have other disabilities because of CDKL5, but someone who is basically not responsive or able to communicate. But now they have a Tobii device where Harper can use her eyes to communicate by tracking images or words on the screen, and was just a far more communicative person. So someone who was basically cut off from the rest of the world to someone who has a way to communicate with everybody else. It's pretty amazing.
And so what are the other, is it simply epilepsy or just specific cases of epilepsy that there has been? And I guess there is no data, and that's part of the problem. But anecdotally, at least, where the hemp oil has been effective, A, I guess, is there any data? And B, is it just confined to specific cases, subsets of epilepsy, or are there other experiences that that people have or that you have encountered through your reporting? In terms of its efficacy?
Well, people use cannabidiol or CBD, hemp oil. It goes by a lot of names, but people use this product for a ton of different things, skin disorders. It's effective in people who have some forms of cancer, not in curing the cancer, but in treating the symptoms and treating the symptoms of chemotherapy, the side effects, I should say. It's only been tested, as far as I know, in Dravet syndrome and Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. These are two of the most catastrophic epilepsies. I have epilepsy, which was what got me interested in this, but I have a relatively mild form. But people with Lennox-Gastaut and Dravet syndrome have seizures that are very often untreatable with the pharmaceuticals we have available for milder forms of epilepsy. And there have been clinical trials conducted by a company called GW Pharmaceuticals that's developing a pill form of CBD right now in the United Kingdom. And there's been huge success with treating these epilepsies.
Interesting. And is that basically the extent of the data that we have on this? Is, I guess, the fact that this data is being, or I should say these studies are happening in the UK, is indicative of the problem that we have in this country?
Right. So there are some other data points. The Children's Hospital in Colorado is performing data gathering efforts with families with children with catastrophic epilepsies who are using CBD. But one of the problems with those data gathering efforts is there are just so few people who have disorders like CDKL5 or Dravet syndrome. I mean, it's a tiny, tiny, vanishingly small number of people. And then Colorado can only really talk to the families who are in Colorado using CBD. So when you start whittling it down, there really aren't enough families to make, you know, a good, sturdy trial size. But again, there, you know, you get mixed reports, but anecdotally, a lot of people have had success with this where they've not had so much luck with other pharmaceuticals.
I imagine when you have a syndrome like we're talking about here, that when you have only 400 or 500 or 600 people who have been diagnosed with it, that you have that problem basically for any drug.
Right. Exactly. When it's a really rare syndrome, it's just very difficult to start putting data together, and it can take a long time. CBD is pretty new. It's really only been a major thing for the past few years, I'd say 3 or 4 years. So putting together information, it's been kind of a scramble.
Okay, so you do write that over the past 2 years, 17 states have passed laws legalizing CBD. I guess this gets to the heart of the problem, or at least the reasons why, is because it's legal in some states, it's not legal in other states, and as far as the federal government is concerned, it's illegal, which is at odds with some of the manufacturers of this. I mean, so tell us a little bit about what that first line of problems is, that there is no regulation, and like any other area, if you have no regulation, there's really no way to know what you're getting when you get this stuff, and that's problematic.
Right. I mean, you think of the worst industries in the United States, the industries that are the least reliable now and historically, and they're the industries that are under prohibition. And sometimes rightly and sometimes wrongly, but, you know, when alcohol was under prohibition, you got some very shady stuff being made in bathtubs, not always safe for human consumption, and sold under very questionable circumstances. And marijuana is basically now in the same situation. People really need it. Well, if you manage to get a hold of CBD and you have success with it, you're going to want to keep using it, especially in these disorders where there really aren't any other options. I mean, you're basically hooked. You're not addicted. You just rely on it to keep living a healthy and normal life, or as close to one as you possibly can. So people are desperate for it. This is a great thing for the companies that are producing these products. At the same time, marijuana and cannabidiol are still illegal federally. I talked to DEA agents during the writing of this article, and they have confirmed repeatedly that they view CBD, cannabidiol, hemp oil as illegal. It's an illegal Schedule I drug.
Now, we should be clear that cannabidiol hemp oil, mm-hmm. just so because I have trouble pronouncing the other one, is you don't get high from this. You don't get a buzz from this,
no.
Right? Okay. I mean, make that clear for us, and so that people can know the difference as to the difference between what people perceive medical marijuana. I mean, if they were to smoke actually marijuana to relieve the problems associated with things like chemo or something to that effect, and then also use that as a jumping point to express why the manufacturers of this insist that it is legal, despite the fact that the FDA says it is. I mean, excuse me, the DEA says it is legal.
So the first thing to know about the illegality and legality of marijuana versus hemp versus CBD is there actually do appear to be contradictory statutes. The DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, they're regulatory agencies. They can't make laws. They can just enforce laws. But they also have to interpret laws. So in some cases, it actually is kind of a gray area as to whether or not the law really does say certain forms of marijuana, of cannabis, which I'll get to next, are actually illegal. There is real unclarity there. But at the end of the day, the Drug Enforcement Agency is the agency that's going to enforce the law. So if it interprets it as being illegal, if it says CBD really is part of the cannabis plant and is a Schedule I drug, if that's how it's reading the law, that's what's going to be enforced. So it is de facto federally illegal.
Based on what the DEA told you, I mean, they say because it comes from the marijuana plant, the way that we read the statute is that anything that comes from the marijuana plant is Schedule I and it's illegal and it's against federal statute. I mean, are they coming for our hemp bags? I mean, like, theoretically, right? Or am I
right.
wrong in that?
Well, they're not going to come for your hemp bags, fortunately, or the hemp seeds and your Kind granola bars or any of the other hemp products you can just buy at the supermarket, because those products have no THC, and in many cases, they're very low in CBD as well. They're just the fibrous stalk part of the hemp.
But they come from the plant, though, right? I mean,
they come from the plant, and there was an act in 2004 that allowed some hemp food products, depending on their chemical makeup. The problem is that the laws are a little bit behind the science. So science has been able now to separate THC, CBD, and some of the other compounds, there are hundreds, in the marijuana plant. So if you think of cannabis as being the parent plant, hemp and marijuana are two different types, or two different uses for the same family of plant. That's also been kind of difficult to nail down as where that line is. But some forms of hemp are legal, but the DEA has come to the conclusion that all CBD and all THC are Schedule I drugs.
And so once the DEA makes that determination, that doesn't necessarily impact the FDA one way or another, but because there is no statute in which that gives the FDA, let's say, authority to look into hemp oil, because it can't be a drug, it can't be a medicine because it's illegal. It falls into this sort of this netherworld.
Right. So the FDA, the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, they look at substances in terms of legal or illegal. The FDA looks at drugs in terms of approved or unapproved. So they're fundamentally concerned with different properties of the same substance. What's hurting the FDA's interest, and the FDA is open to approving a CBD pharmaceutical, and that could happen very soon. It's fast-tracked that drug I talked about earlier, Epidiolex, which is pure CBD, and it's being made by a company in the United Kingdom. But the FDA has a problem where no labs in the United States, which are regulated by the laws that regulate labs that test other drugs, none of these labs can accept cannabis because it's a Schedule I drug. So if I'm a parent and my kid is using CBD that I'm getting off the internet and I take it to my local university laboratory and say, I want to know what's in this, they're going to tell me, we can't accept that. We couldn't take a bag of heroin from you and we can't take that. So there's really no way for the FDA to come to the conclusion right now from labs in the United States that these drugs should be approved because they're legal.
Tell us about what Brandon Kensler found when he secured some hemp oil for his daughter's, I guess, dealing with her leukemia.
So Brandon Kensler got a sample of Real Scientific Hemp Oil, which is one of the products we talked about in the piece.
And Real Scientific is a brand name.
That's a brand name,
okay.
To be clear. Yes, yeah, that's like Tylenol. Yeah, so they take this stuff, and he sent it off to a lab that tests marijuana products and asked to know what the chemical makeup of this oil was, and it turned out to be different than what was labeled. To be clear, Medical Marijuana Inc., which is the company that produces this, claims that someone along the line tampered with the product, probably a competitor. They say that competitors tamper with their products and send them in for testing. So that's their counterclaim. But Brandon Kensler found that THC levels were much higher and the CBD levels a bit lower, I think, than what was advertised on the product's label. So after that, his daughter got sick. He tried some of it. He got sick. He said that several friends that he provided with samples also experienced some sickness. On the internet, people call this adjustment sickness. And doctors that I talked to in Colorado, where they see lots of kids who are using CBD, also reported that kids got sick, diarrhea and vomiting using this stuff.
From
the problem with that is
this
course,
from Real Scientific or from other places?
Brandon Krinsler was using Real Scientific. The doctors that I talked to didn't specify brands, just CBD oils.
Okay, so what do we sort of, I guess, gather from that? That it's that there is sometimes it's difficult to adjust to actual hemp oil, or sometimes the hemp oil that you get, it does not consist of what it supposedly should consist of. And whether that's attributable to some evil competitor who somehow gets in between you and the company where you buy the hemp oil from. I mean, I don't know how that happens, frankly. There's part of the problem is there's no way to say to the state's attorney general, hey, we got a product that was not what was advertised, right?
Exactly, because it's illegal. And especially when the THC levels are very high. THC is absolutely 100% a Schedule I substance, according to DEA. So if you go to the attorney general in your state and say, hey, someone sold me this CBD oil, but really it's got a ton of THC in it, well, now you're in possession of an illegal narcotic. So one of the big problems here is, absolutely, it's like the Wild West out there. I mean, these companies make all kinds of kind of conspiratorial claims about people tampering with their products and labs not being honest. Indeed, the marijuana testing labs that test this stuff in some cases are not calibrated in the same way. So you get one result from one lab, a different result from another, and there's no regulatory body that regulates them to make them use the same types of measurements. So you get wildly different results with this stuff, and there's no way that you can bring in an overarching regulatory body to sort it all out.
And there's also, I would imagine, if I'm a parent and I have a child who's suffering from one of these forms of epilepsy or some disease that I believe there's reason to believe that hemp oil will provide some measure of relief, more or less. There's no way for me to know that when my child doesn't respond to this hemp oil, whether they're not responding to it because they're not responding to hemp oil, or they're not responding to it because I bought it from, you know, Acme Hemp Oil, and Acme Hemp Oil is in fact not really hemp oil, or it has other things in it that it could have different chemical properties. It could be there's been pesticides used in the growth of this hemp, and my kid's sensitive to it. I mean, there's no way to know, right, at that point?
There's no way to know, even batch to batch, that the oil you're getting from the exact same company is identical in chemical makeup to the batch you got last month, because hemp plants are all different genetically. So just like the flowers in your garden, they change. Generation to generation, season to season, you get different plants. And so when they make CBD oil out of different crops of hemp, you're going to get different compositions. So your child might respond to it one month, and the next month they might not. And there's no way to tell what's going to happen.
And presumably, I imagine these companies say, oh, we've got quality control. We always make sure that it's X percent of this and X percent of that.
They do. They do say that they use quality controls. One problem is that because it's illegal to grow that stuff in the United States, a lot of these companies are sourcing hemp that's been grown overseas. Most of them say they grow it in Europe. There are rumors, and I emphasize that there are rumors, that some of this stuff is grown in China and then sourced in the United States. And it's usually very difficult to tell company to company who is supplying the stuff. Some of the growers that are making this stuff in the United States, like Charlotte's Web, really do graft and clone the plants, basically. They inoculate stalks from existing plants onto new plants so that they get the same composition every time. But there's no way to tell that the other companies are doing that at all.
Has the legalization of marijuana recreationally, has it begun to impact this business? In other words, I mean, if I'm a parent, right, at this point, I'm going to buy, Colorado hemp oil exists, I'm going to buy it from Colorado hemp oil, because at least there's some, within the context of that state, there's some measure of, I don't know, guidelines for the industry that, is that the case or no?
Well, I think the medical marijuana, the legalization of recreational marijuana in some states has been both good and bad. On one hand, it's eliminated a lot of stigma, and it has introduced people who actually are interested in consumer safety and science into places where they can safely and legally practice their craft. So there are organizations that are trying to set up regulations and protocols for laboratories that test this stuff, and they're trying to get laboratories to voluntarily opt in, saying, hey, if we ever get federal legalization, the FDA is going to come in and tear you a new one because you're not actually calibrated for consumer safety. So that's a good thing. On the other hand, it's an industry, so it's profit-driven. And a lot of the laboratories that sell this stuff and a lot of the dispensaries that sell this stuff are not really all that interested in putting all their effort into CBD because, again, you can't get high from it. You get high from THC. That's the good cop. CBD is the other cop. Not a bad cop, just not a fun cop. It's a medical
right. So dollar for dollar, the returns are much better. If you're going to grow, if you're going to grow marijuana, you're just going to sell it, recreationally, because dollar for dollar is just easier to do.
Exactly. So that's one of the downsides.
Interesting. And so all those people with any type of expertise, or I guess any type of genuine, integrity in their process, there's just greener pastures for them.
Right. And so in some cases, there are people who are very interested in regulating the medically consumed products, the CBD products. There's definitely a community around that. Project CBD has an interest in doing that. They're a group of activists that are interested in consumer safety around cannabidiol products. But on the other hand, the big money is in the recreational high THC strains.
In the event that I was not one of those people who believe that, there's no way these CBD oil companies would sell subpar products because that would hurt their business model, and down the road the market would take care of them. Assuming I wasn't one of those people who actually believed that, and I think we have evidence, right? I mean, you know, I guess according to these companies, it's their competitors who are nefariously changing the contents of what they're selling. But so what has to happen next? I mean, is it really just as simple as on a federal level, marijuana needs to be legalized so that essentially all of this research and all of the quality controls and the regulatory system can begin to function the way that they should?
You know, that's definitely the end goal, I think. I think that would be the outcome that would be best for people with really catastrophic epilepsies and other disorders that respond to medical marijuana, allowing laboratories, well-regulated laboratories, to accept these products and start testing them, allowing hemp and cannabis to be grown in the United States in safe, regulated conditions where there aren't heavy metals in the soil and pesticides and solvents being used that shouldn't be consumed. I think that would be a great situation, but I think there are intermediary points, you know, between now and then. One of them being some provision that allows regulated laboratories in all states to accept these products and test them. And, you know, instituting in states that have CBD-only legislation, I think, you know, there are multiple states that do, I think they should force their laboratories to regulate themselves according to consumer safety protocols that make sense, so that you get the same results every time.
So do you need, do you need federal statute in that instance? Or is it, I mean, can you get, like, waivers, some type of waivers from, I don't know who would give those waivers to specific laboratories, or is it, will the states be able to assert, like, look, we have authority over this? I mean, how does that, do we really need to wait to Congress, or is this something that the regulatory agencies have the latitude to say, we're going to allow for 6 permits in these states to perform these studies?
I don't think that the federal regulatory bodies actually do have that latitude as long as CBD remains a Schedule I substance. But the federal government hasn't shown a lot of interest in pursuing laboratories in states with CBD-only legislation. Even though it remains federally illegal, they just haven't really gone after them. So I think if you had a plurality of states saying, well, despite what's in the federal statute, what we have to do for the safety of kids in our states is to regulate this stuff as best we can. I think that would perhaps move Congress without having to rely on them to make the first move.
I mean, doesn't that, I mean, I would imagine if I am going to invest, let's say, in that laboratory, or I'm going to go get a job there, I'm a little concerned, because if Chris Christie, for instance, becomes president, right, according to Chris Christie, day one or day two, he sends the DEA in to shut me down and maybe to arrest me. I mean, is that, I mean, do you find that that's a like a sort of a an animating concern?
I mean, it's the wildness of it all, is that dispensaries do have their doors kicked open by the feds from time to time, and for in legal states. So, I mean, it does happen. So if you're an investor or you're an employee or you're someone with a lot of experience in science and you want to contribute to the greater good by helping people with really, really, really rough diseases, that is an avenue that could be really scary for you. And that's the rub.
Right. Elizabeth Runig, staff writer at the New Republic, we will put a link to Inside the Medical Marijuana Industry's Wild New Frontier. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.